Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this edition of our ongoing season on early pro teams that help shape the game of football, we take a closer look at a franchise from the state of Indiana. As a matter of fact, the first NFL franchise in the NFL, the Muncie Flyers. We have their story and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, where we are going to go down that road of early pro football teams like we do each and every Monday, just bringing you the great history that to tell you how pro football got its start. And it comes in the roots of these early pro teams. And we don't have an expert today, per se, but we're going to be taking some excerpts from some great historians like Roy Tsai of the PFR. And some others that we're going to be talking about here as we talk about the Muncie Flyers. Now, Muncie is a city in Indiana, and it's about 50 miles northeast of Indianapolis. This town, almost 100 years ago, hosted a pro football team that should never be forgotten, the Muncie Flyers. The city is made up of smaller communities such as Heakin Park, Avondale, and Congerville, among others. And it was Congerville where the story of the Flyers started in 1905. The activity of the team is sparse in the early years, and in 1910, the Congerville Athletic Club finished with a 10-0-1 record, outscoring their opponents 145-0 per Wikipedia post. Now think about that for a second. They were 10 wins, 0 losses, 1 tie, scored 145 points, 0 points against. That's pretty impressive. All of the home games were played against other local Muncie teams, while the road games were played in nearby Hartford City, Dunkirk, and Alexandria. In 1916, the Congerville Athletic Club team and the Congerville Flyers team merged, and Muncie was represented by the Congerville Flyers. According to a Pro Football Research Association 2002 article by Roy Tsai in the group's publication, The Coffin Corner, the Congerville Flyers formed in other local teams, Wabash, Fort Wayne, Indianapolis, and others were opponents of this early Sandlot team. By 1919, the squad had adopted the Muncie Association to its name and took on stiffer competition from the neighboring Ohio, such as the Cincinnati Celts and the Dayton Oaks. An interesting figure starts coming out in the story of the Flyers. A son of one of the famous Ball brothers, the family that started the Ball Mason Jar Company near Muncie, Earl Ball. Earl used some of his wealth to start signing some top-notch players in 1920 as he was the manager of the team when news of a professional football league started circulating around. Players like Illinois halfback Dutch Sterneman, Purdue fullback Kenneth Huffine, and others were hired into the franchise to raise the competitive level of the team. Ball was hoping to get a game scheduled against the Canton Bulldogs in Canton upon membership in a newly proposed league. Earl Ball even attended the famous September 17, 1920 meeting that Ralph Hay hosted in his Canton, Ohio Hutmobile showroom. And Ball did just that. He joined the APFA. He returned to Muncie with a couple more good players on the roster and a first American Professional Football Association game scheduled for early October against the Rock Island Independents. Allegedly, a rumor had it that the team also was penciled in a game against George Halas and his Decatur Staleys team. That's a team that would turn into the Bears, if you remember. Speaking of the Staleys, they signed Sterneman away from Muncie before he even played a down for the Flyers. Flyers. And after a warm-up game with the local Muncie Tigers semi-pro team on September 26 of 1920, the Flyers made their way to Illinois for the October 3rd, 1920 showdown with Rock Island. The October 3rd game of Muncie and Rock Island is historic, as it is one of two games played that day and marks the first official matchups of two APFA franchises playing against each other as opponents. In essence, this is ground zero for live game action in the NFL. Well, of course, we know the other game was the Columbus Panhandles and the Dayton Triangles. Well, as the APFA would change its name to the National Football League a couple years later, that's why it was the first in action in the NFL. The Flyers were no match for the Independents, as Rock Island pounded Muncie's squad 45-0. Roy Tsai, in his article, tells us that the Staleys then canceled the October 10 contest with the Flyers due to poor competitive showing of the franchise. And what was worse was that more players on the roster left Muncie for greener pastures after the inaugural game shellacking that they took. Yeah, they went over to other APFA teams and other professional teams that weren't in the APFA. Other game cancellations occurred soon after, as the future looked even bleaker for the Flyers, as the Muncie Tigers and the Muncie Offers More AC teams were grabbing the local attention by defeating opponents like Wabash and Cincinnati. And they were in all the newspapers. The fans were sort of, you know, jumping on that bandwagon of those winners when the Flyers were getting clobbered and, you know, the Muncie Offers More AC and the Muncie Tigers were winning. Sy's article, though, says that in this idle period, manager Ball signed a few new players to strengthen his team. They were some good ones, like Tibbs of the Wabash Athletic Association, Bismeyer of the Cincinnati Celts, Bourbon Bunny Bondurant of DePew. That's not easy to say that name either, folks. George Mack McIndoe of the Fort Wayne Friars, and quarterback Thomas of DePaul. Now, after a couple more cancellations and rainouts, the Flyers finally got a game against the undefeated Gas City Tigers on Thanksgiving Day. Now, Gas City was not a member of the APFA. They were an independent but well-known club in the state of Indiana. The Flyers prevailed over Gas City by the score of 19-7, giving the Gas City squad their first loss that season. Halfback Mickey Hull scored 3 minutes into the game on a 45-yard run. And on the next possession, Kenneth Huffine, he scored, and Czech Guy kicked the extra point, making the score 13-0. Early in the second quarter, Czech Guy scored but failed on the point after. Now, the Flyers then finished off the season with two more victories, one against Muncie AC squad and a second meeting with Gas City to finish off their inaugural APFA campaign with a respectable 3-1 record. The second meeting with Gas City 11 had an exciting finish. The Tigers beefed up on their lineup with an additional players with the intentions to get revenge for that earlier loss to the Flyers. Early in the third quarter, with the Tigers up by a score, Gas City coughed up the ball and the Muncie Flyers recovered it on the 5-yard line. Huffine pounded the ball across the goal line on that possession to tie the game at 7-7. The last score of the game came from the Flyers. Quarterback Cooney Czechai returned a punt 60 yards for a touchdown to give the Flyers a 13-7 victory. It was almost not to be, because the Tigers of Gas City almost scored on their final possession of the game, but fumbled it again, giving the Flyers possession to seal the win. The Flyers could not claim the title for the APFA, as they had lost their only league head-to-head game, but they did state themselves as the champions of the state of Indiana for 1920 after knocking off Gas City and Muncie AC. The Muncie Flyers returned to the APFA in 1921, but posted a record of 0-2 and then faded into obscurity, not playing in the 1923 NFL. The team did still play as an independent pro team through the 1926 season. And as their record in the NFL, well, the Flyers, with their three league games, are the third shortest-lived team in league history, behind two games of the original New York Giants, we'll talk about them later, and one game of the Tonawanda Cardex Lumbermen, which we talked about just a week ago with Ken Crippen. So make sure you check that out. They had their game and a half that was played. For more details on this great team in history, the Muncie Flyers, make sure you read Roy Tsai's article that we mentioned earlier by joining the PFRA or go to professionalfootballresearchers.org and see if you can look it up that way on the Muncie Flyers. But it's so inexpensive to join the PFRA, Professional Football Research Association, and get in on some of these great articles with these historians like Roy Tsai and others, Ken Crippen, who we talked about last week, just writing these wonderful articles about the football history that we can take so much from and educate and preserve the history. We're here to help them. We're here in it together, folks, to preserve football history. So if you like what you heard or you want to give us some feedback, you can email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. You can also find us at the sportshistorynetwork.com, where we are one of a couple dozen different podcasters that are just bringing you great sports history every day. Not everything's football there. We got sports of all kinds from around the world, from different eras, something for everybody in the whole family to enjoy, very family friendly. Make sure you join us there at sportshistorynetwork.com. It is the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear, and if you want to get into the football history, well, we have plenty of that on pigskindispatch.com. Use that powerful search engine box that we have there. Just put about any topic you want in there, and you will have multiple articles pop up. We also highlight key words and names throughout all of our articles. So if you click on them, you want to know more about a certain subject, well, they'll pop up. So today, if you click on Muncie Flyers, well, other articles will pop up there in our search box, so you can look at some of those other ones as well. So we invite you to do all that. We appreciate you spending your time with us today. We hope that you'll join us tomorrow, and we thank you for being a faithful listener. You can also find us on your favorite podcast provider, so make sure you follow us on there. We're also on Twitter, at Pigskin Dispatch. Facebook, we have the Pigskin Dispatch page. And we also often populate LinkedIn under the name of Darren Hayes. So look us up on one of those, give us some feedback, share with us, and till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus, get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that. Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.